Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
When we think about women that are serving the Lord, we are always delighted to have one of them come in studio, which is our situation today. But it's really because we see these women as being kindred spirits, that they're trusting the Lord in big ways and He's doing amazing things. And I can't wait to hear about what God's been doing in Irene Chapman's life and with her family. And that's why we invited her here today, Cheryl.
And Irene's like a natural born leader. So the turn and twists of her life that she's taken and her willingness to do whatever the Lord asks is just incredible. So we're all in for a treat today. So I have loved Irene since the first time I met her because, one, she's super honest and she's exuberant.
And she's laughing. Irene, welcome. We're glad you're here. And you start off with the laugh. That's good.
Well, she's a mom of how many boys again? Is it four or five?
Four boys.
Four boys and one girl. So you have to laugh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If she didn't laugh, she'd die. You know, I mean, don't you find those circumstances?
That's absolutely true.
Yeah. And that's marriage, too. If I don't laugh, I will die. So, you know, that's part of survival, even with marriage. Laugh or die.
And it's good for our livers.
It is.
There you go.
There we go. We have liver laughs. So, Irene, I want to hear a little bit about, you know, your growing up years and, you know, where you grew up and when you came to know Jesus.
So I grew up in a Christian family. I'm from Rhode Island, and I grew up going to a Baptist church, and I'm the fifth of five children, too, so I really identify with my youngest son, probably more than I should, but I grew up in a Baptist church in Rhode Island, and we were at church every time the door was open.
Yep.
We were there Sunday morning, we were there Sunday evening, Wednesday night prayer service, any children's things throughout the week we were there, and it was just like normal.
Right.
For me.
And VBS.
VBS.
Every summer.
Yeah.
I remember having this guy who was a magician. I loved those times when you'd get church every day of the week and you had games and, you know, all of that. So, yes, I relate to that, even though I come from, you know, Foursquare and then a Calvary background. But it's the same.
Same. It's the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm. And so you kind of grow up just knowing the Lord and loving the Lord. And then there are those times where it just goes deeper. It becomes so real. Is that what happened to you?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I grew up knowing the Lord. I never had a time where I doubted that He loved me and I doubted that His word was true. And then, you know, in high school, I was kind of like this angsty teenager. And I remember going to snow camp because that's another thing you do when
you grow
up in the church. You go to snow camp in the winter. And at snow camp, they said, well, we do missions trips to Haiti. Anyone who wants to come, get information in the back. So I went and I said, I want to go to Haiti. It just sounded better than whatever winter in Rhode Island was going to have with my family. So I didn't go out of any like desire to really go deeper with the Lord. I just went really to get away from my circumstances. And they said, okay, well, you're 13. You have to be 14 to go. So the day I turned 14, I signed up for a missions trip to Haiti, and I went once a year all throughout high school.
Wow.
And I didn't go out of any great motives, but it changed me, and I wanted to know the God that the people in Haiti were worshiping, where they didn't have anything, and they didn't even have clothes to change into after church, and they were sweaty, and they'd never seen candy before, but they loved God, and that changed me and just got me on this track where I didn't really care what the Lord called me to, but I wanted to serve Him somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Haiti every year of high school. And then when I was a junior in high school, my choir teacher and I were really close. And she had a cousin who was a missionary in Mexico. And her missionary cousin in Mexico wanted my choir teacher to send one of her kids down to homeschool their third grade daughter.
Oh, my goodness.
My choir teacher said, no way, but I know a girl who will go. And so she asked me if I would go to Mexico to homeschool her cousin's third grade
and
daughter
how old
in
were you?
Mexico. I was 16.
Wow.
So I told my school, my public Rhode Island school, that I was not going to be going my junior year to their campus, but I was going to be in Mexico instead, and could they please send me my schoolwork? And they said no. And I said, well, I'm going anyway. And so they figured it out. I don't know. They figured it out. There was another girl that wanted to be an aide in Washington, D.C. So they said, well, if there are two of them, I guess we can work it out for them. So I went down to Mexico to homeschool this missionary cousin's third grade daughter. And it was awful and it was horrible. But I had the Lord. And so that was me when I was 16. And then after high school, I went with YWAM for 6 months. Mm. Did a DTS in South Africa.
Wow.
And I came back and worked for the Alpha Course in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And the difference between the two, like it was 1 year off. I was 6 months in South Africa, living in the bush. We didn't have electricity. We didn't have running water. We were digging latrines. We were doing VBS in the hills. And then going to Manhattan and living with my brother and working for this organization that had it all together, my head got so turned around. And that, I think, is actually the point where I had to decide, am I going to follow the Lord or am I going to follow the world and just do whatever I want? Mm. So I went to college, and my first year in the university, I really was at the brink with the Lord. And I knew who he was and I knew his word, but I didn't know if I was going to actually follow that or not.
Mm. I had the same experience, same thing, freshman year. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a really pivotal time.
Only I didn't go to South Africa or do anything like that noble. But it was that questioning. And it, again, I knew, but I wanted my will.
Yeah,
that was the hard part. Yeah.
So I remember this day I was walking to class. I lived with a professor and his wife very near campus, so I could just walk. And I was walking to class and just praying, and I just said, Lord, I am not going to pray anymore.
Mm.
And it was like I got a taste of the outer darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, whoa, that's really scary. What is life without God?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of walked that out for a little bit. And then it was spring break, and I was going to London to visit one of my friends that I had been in YWAM with. And I just had this feeling like I was going to die. Mm. And to the point, and I don't get weird like this, but it was to the point where I wrote out a letter and I left it on my desk. I was saying, I said, if I die, da, 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 da. And so I was going to visit my friend. He was in Liverpool. I flew into London. He was in Liverpool. So I went up. He was in college. And the only thing to do in Liverpool, if you're there, is they have these two cathedrals. And so I was walking through one of these cathedrals while he was in class, because there's nothing else to do in Liverpool. It's ugly and there's nothing. So I was walking through this one cathedral, and the Bible was open to this passage in Luke. And I was like, oh, the Bible. I haven't read the Bible in a while. I wonder what it has to say. And it was Jesus and his disciples walking around, and they see this fig tree and it's all withered. They say, Lord, there is no fruit on this. Cut it down. And he says, Jesus is talking to the vineyard keeper. He's like, cut it down. And the guy says, no, give me a year. I'll water it and let's see if it grows. Just give me a year. And so in that moment, I just felt like I was that tree.
Mm-hmm.
And this was my year. Either I was going to get cut down because I just wasn't bearing any fruit, or it was my year to really dig into the Lord and fertilize it and see if anything would grow. Mm-hmm. And so that was really the moment where I just came back to the Lord with all my heart. And I was like, whatever it takes, Lord, yours. Okay.
Isn't it just so gorgeous how God's word is alive and powerful? And it just passages that might not mean anything to anybody else. And then he just uses it like the flashlight is right on that for you.
Yep.
So specific.
So now, so you continued at the university.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't you get involved in the Christian club too?
I did for a little bit. There were some issues there. I was part of it for a little bit, but then
I think we talked about that one time in one of our conversations, right?
Yeah, they were having some really identity issues within them. So I started going to my now husband's father's church.
Okay.
And I was real involved in church. But I was working full-time at a pharmaceutical company while I was doing my degree, and I didn't have a whole lot of extra time for extracurriculars.
Mm-hmm. So this is back in the U.S., back in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So now you're at your now husband. So come on, tell us about how that happened. How did you...
love a good love
yes,
story.
Yes, we love the romance.
Love is fun. Yeah.
Yes.
So I started going to my friend's dad's church because, you know, this whole time that I was like, I'm not going to talk to the Lord. Stupid. But I hadn't been going to a church. And so I was at the university and one of my friends was there that I grew up with in the Baptist church. And I knew that he had been going to Calvary Chapel. And one of my friends from YWAM that I really respected also went to a Calvary Chapel out here in California. And so I saw my friend. I said, Josh, do you still go to that Calvary Chapel? And he said, yeah, I do. I said, I want to come with you. So I started going to church with him. And Anthony, my husband, at that point was in college in Indiana. So he wasn't around. But I started going to his dad's church. And one of the first weekends, there was a ladies' retreat. I said, I'll go. I love ladies' retreats. So why not? Let's see what's going on. It's a good way to get to know people in the church anyway. So I went and I brought my guitar with me. And halfway through the retreat, the worship leader left. She just said, you know, I need to go home and be with my daughter. And she left the retreat. So my now mother-in-law said, what are we going to do? So she said, Irene, could you lead worship? And I said, yeah, sure. Why not? So I was leading worship at this ladies' retreat at this church that I just started going to. And so my mother-in-law gets this word from the Lord. And she says, that's Anthony's wife.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And so then my now mother-in-law tells her very dear friend, who I've known since birth, Rhode Island's a really small Christian community. She said, the weirdest thing just happened. The Lord just told me that's Anthony's wife. So I'm driving home with this lady and she says, what do you think about Anthony? Paula's got plans for you. And I was like, wait. I don't know. I don't know this guy. I don't know anything about this. This is weird. So that same weekend, he got engaged to a girl in Indiana. The wrong girl.
Obviously.
Yeah. Wasn't me. So that all broke up. And he came back to Rhode Island, and I refused to talk to him for the first year.
Oh, yeah.
He was back because it was just too weird to me. I did try to get him connected with my friends. So I had pity on him. And I was like, do you want to get together with people? Like, you need friends, clearly. But I wouldn't really talk to him at all. And I don't know, there was just this expectation in the church, like, oh,
well, and
they're the two
you?
Young people. At this point, I think I'm 19 or 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he came back and I didn't talk to him. And then he took a job as a youth pastor at a church an hour away. And then we started talking because it was safer.
Yeah. No threat.
Yeah. Nope. No threat. And so one night we were talking on the phone. He'd called me. I was like, how are you doing? And I was like, I'm doing fine. How are you? And he was just upset because he was like, I don't know. I moved away from college and I don't have any friends anymore and I'm here. And you know how you just launch into things sometimes without thinking? I was like, no, that's not true. The Lord loves you and he has this plan for you and he's not done with you and blah, 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 blah. And at the end, there's dead silence on the other end of the phone. I was like, are you there? He was like, do you want to go out this weekend?
Oh, my goodness.
And he said, I'm going to New York City. My friends are getting married and they're having this reception. But Connecticut's on the way back. We could stop and have coffee on my way back on Sunday. And so he's like, all right. So I go to New York. And on the way back, he calls and he's like, well, I can't do it tonight. He said, you know, someone's in town and we've got this thing and I just can't do it. And I was like, no, you're not canceling on me. I said, no, we'll just wait. I'll go to your thing. And afterward, we'll get coffee and then I'll drive home. So we had coffee in the town of New London in Connecticut. Let me just tell you, there's no coffee in the evening. There are bars and there's a gas station and there's nothing else. So we walked around New London all night long trying to find coffee and we didn't find it anywhere. But sometime, we're both really stubborn, so that neither of us was going to be the first one to leave. And sometime around 4 a.m, we decided we were going to have a relationship. And we sat down on the stairs. I know, it's just weird.
Okay. I love it.
Really not that weird, but this story is weird.
All romance is weird. That's what makes it so wonderful. I mean, I'm seeing Hallmark.
Yes.
We sit down on the stairs of this building. I don't even know whose house it was. Somebody's house. We sit down on the stairs of this building and we talk through what our relationship is going to look like. And if it's going nowhere, we're going to stop it right away because I'm not going to waste your time. You're not going to waste my time. And this is what it's going to look like. And we're going to serve the Lord. And he says, yeah, I'm not moving fast because, you know, he'd broken off an engagement.
Right.
And I was like, you know, I'm thinking like maybe 5 years. I said, okay. And he said, you're not going to domesticate me. And I said, what? He said, I'm not cutting my hair for you. He had really long, struggly hair. And I didn't care. I was like, oh, okay, don't cut your hair for me, whatever. But that had been a big issue with one of his other girlfriends. He was going to be okay once he cut his hair.
Yeah.
So we just sat down, we talked it through, and we were just on the same page. We both wanted to serve the Lord. And we both were not going to just mess around with people and play around with someone's emotions if it wasn't going to go anywhere. So we went to breakfast, and then I drove to work the next day. And
without any sleep.
Yeah.
The romance will do that.
So that's our story. We dated for a year, and then we got married. I think we were engaged for 2 months, and then we got married and lived happily ever after.
So then you graduated from college, and he hadn't finished his degree yet. But you had finished yours.
No, he had.
Oh, he had.
So he finished his bachelor's and then he moved home. He was a year ahead of me anyway. And then I took a gap year to go to South Africa. So he was 2 years ahead of me.
Okay. So after you graduate, you get married. And I want to know. And okay. So Anthony also sings. So you guys, how long till you started singing together? Or did that happen while you were dating?
You know, I remember going to a coffee shop and doing a thing together.
That's kind of cool.
Once.
Yeah.
He needed someone to sing with him, so he asked me to. So I did when we were dating. But then, yeah, like once we were married, we would lead worship together and do different stuff.
So when did the Israel thing happen?
So when we got married, like I said, I had been involved in missions ever since freshman year in high school. And he had been involved in missions separately. So I had done like the Caribbean and Mexico and Africa. And he had gone to Hong Kong and Thailand. And
oh, my goodness.
He'd been down to Peru. So between the two of us, we'd covered a fair portion of the states. And we just wanted to serve God together. So we had this big world map on our wall of our first apartment. And we had little pins, places that we'd been or places that we had connections. And he, when he was in college, he had done a semester abroad in Jerusalem and he loved it. And he really had felt close to a church there and they always wanted him to come back and be their worship leader. And so we would pray in front of this map and just be like, Lord, where do you want us to go? Where can we serve you together? And so we'd talk about the Philippines or we'd talk about Africa. At the end of every conversation, Anthony would say, or maybe we'll just go back to Jerusalem. So after a few of these conversations, I was like, okay, well, maybe we should just go and take a trip and see if this is a place that we could serve together. And so we did, and we decided, hey, let's go for it. We talked with the elders at our church, and they were supportive. And so we went around and raised support really quickly and moved out to Israel.
Now, did you have any of the children yet?
We didn't. No, it was just the two of us. I see our first prayer card and I'm like, we could have been so normal. Just two people.
No.
We could have been so normal.
It doesn't really go that way. Sorry.
Yeah. And then I want to go back. I want to just go back just a little bit too. What did your mother-in-law say when you finally became a couple?
She didn't say anything to us, but she was really glad. They were really supportive. I had great in-laws.
She must have said, I did hear the Lord. I did hear the Lord.
Yes.
I did hear the Lord.
I told you.
There's something so wonderful to have it confirmed. Like, that was actually the Lord speaking to me. So it builds everybody's faith. You know, you're like, oh, she called it. So you have a lot of respect for your mother-in-law. And then, you know, she's like, I did hear the Lord. So her faith is increased, you know, so this is really good. So you go on this. What do we want to call this? It's kind of like a Joshua and Caleb to spy out the land. So how long were you there on this like experimental trip?
I think just a week or two. It was pretty short.
Oh, yeah, that's not really enough to...
It's not enough to know what you're getting into.
No, not at all.
Sure.
Yes. So what was that? You know, and again, there are no children, so there's no straps. So you're going there. And did the Lord at that point direct you to where you would be in Israel? Or just was it like an Abraham thing? Just go to the land and I will show you.
No, we had a place that we went to serve. at that point.
Okay.
So we went to serve, and our whole
and this is just
the very beginning.
This is just the pilot trip.
No, the pilot trip we went. Yeah, we stayed with this one ministry in Jerusalem.
Okay.
And
is that the one that Anthony had worked with? Okay.
Yeah. So we went. And we just looked around and we prayed and we talked with people and we just felt like, yeah, we could serve here together. So let's try. And we went for 2 years.
Okay. Now, I've got to ask this. Did Anthony speak Hebrew?
No.
No.
And you didn't? He could say yes or no.
Yeah.
A couple words, but.
Yeah. And shalom.
Yeah. Everybody can say shalom.
I know. That's a good word.
It's a good one.
Yes. So that was pretty much it for and you didn't know any Hebrew, right?
No. No. No, not the alphabet, nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't even know shalom.
Yeah.
That was really backward.
Yeah. But, you know, what is remarkable to me, too, is your willingness and your readiness to go even to this, you know, place that you've never been to serve Jesus.
Yeah.
So you made a 2-year commitment. And where was that? Where was the 2-year commitment?
At a place in Jerusalem.
In Jerusalem. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we went and we, from the beginning, just wanted to reach the average Israeli. Like, we didn't want to reach the Orthodox Jews or like the tourists or the expats. Like, we just wanted to meet the people who lived there, grew up there, lived normal lives there, and were just there. So we learned Hebrew when we first got there. We spent the first 7 months in full-time language school.
Wow.
And then we volunteered at a school to learn the Hebrew that people actually speak outside of language school.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What kind of school? Like an elementary or high school or junior high or college? Or
it was a Christian school. It's the only Christians, wait, maybe not the only one, but it's like the big Christian school in Jerusalem. So it was, I think, K-8.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah, I know. Kids are great teachers because they really correct you.
Yeah.
That's where I learned some of my Spanish.
You get all the slang.
Yeah. And they don't have any qualms about correcting you and telling you, no, that's not the way, you know, shalom, Cheryl. Is that how you say my name is Cheryl? Shalom? Shalom?
Shalom, Cheryl.
Shalom, Cheryl. Okay, well, there you go. So you worked with these kids, and so you were honing your skills.
Yeah. Yeah. So after that time in language school, the Lord led us to Beersheba.
Mm-hmm.
And it had never been on our map. You know, it's one of those things where we never would have set out and said, yeah, we're going to go to Israel and we're going to live in Beersheba.
Okay. Now, explain where Beersheba is in relationship to the country, you know.
Okay. So if you have the country of Israel, Beersheba is kind of in the middle, a little bit south from the middle. You have Tel Aviv on the coast and Jerusalem kind of a little bit up in the center. And Beersheba is an hour south of Jerusalem. It's in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally desert. It's the fourth biggest city in Israel.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
And that was the first place that Abraham built an altar, isn't it?
Or he dug his wells there. Yep.
Yeah, dug his wells there. Yeah. And I think he also planted a tamarisk tree, but I could be wrong about that.
I think he did. Yep. It might still be there.
Yeah, it might still be there. You never know.
Look.
Yeah.
And we always pronounced it as Beersheba.
Yeah, but Beersheba, that's what happens when you live there, right? You have to learn how to say it. So you go there and you at least you speak Hebrew. Now, did you have a place to stay when you moved there or did you know where you were going? You know what? I just realized we only have 1 minute left and I have so many questions because this is only the beginning of her story.
We got her
into the promised land.
There we go.
and
it took a long time to get there.
Yeah, and she's going to spend quite a few years there. And we're going to hear about the adventures of Irene in Israel. So that works.
Can't wait.
For the alliteration and everything.
Yes.
That will be part two. And that's why you need to come back as our listeners and hear part two. Because if you think it's been so fun and so exciting, her life is going to take, I would say, 5 twists and turns,
right.
at least. And, you know, sometimes the Lord doesn't give you the life you expected, but he gives you the life he has for you. And I think with you, that's been part of it. And it's just so.
So true.
Great.
So true.
To know.
And we should say that if you are listening on the radio, be sure to, you know, realize that these are in podcasts as well. So you can go to Women Worth Knowing and look up the episodes and listen to what Irene Chapman has to say. And we'll be doing part two when we come back next week.
Next week,
thanks
please.
For joining us.
Yes, and come back. You don't want to miss this. It's in Be'er Sheva. It's going to be so good.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at WWK@CCCM.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.